We're holding Chavdalad Amud Aleph top line. We said in the Mishnah that the Beis Din was interrogating the Edim to see whether the details of what they say about how they saw the moon matches what Beis Din had calculated. And among the questions were Kamahoya Gavoya, how far off the ground was the moon? Ulayin Hoya Noita Hula, and in what direction were the crescent's horns facing? Actually, we're referring not so much to that. We're really referring to what it says right before that in the Mishnah of Tzfoino, the Drayma, where they asked them whether the moon was to the north or south of the sun. So the Gemara says, Tana Chodah, we learn one Braisa that says, Tzfoino Dvarav Kayamin, that if they say that the moon is to the north, then what they're saying is valid, and we can accept that what they're saying is valid. And if they say it's to the south, then it doesn't count, then it's no good. But the problem is we have another braisa that says the other way around. So which is it? Is it always in one side or the other, or what are the two braisas saying? And the answer is, there's a difference between the summertime and the wintertime. Now, what's the difference? So Rashi has a long explanation over here that has to do with during the summertime, the sun rises in the northeast and sets in the northwest, and it goes around almost three whole sides of the sky. And during the wintertime, its path in the sky is shorter, and it starts out at the southeast. It always curves towards the south in the northern hemisphere. It always curves towards the south. So during the summer, during the winter time, it starts out in the southeast, curves towards the south. It has a much shorter path during the winter, and it sets in the southwest. So Rashi explains, therefore, that here's a part that's very difficult to understand in what Rashi is saying. Rashi says that when you see the new moon, it's always in the southwest corner. So therefore, it would come out, in other words, that during the winter time, when the sun has a very short path and only goes to the southeast corner, therefore the moon is going to end up being north of the sun. Whereas during the summertime, since the sun goes much further along the west side, it goes all the way until the northwest, and the moon, Rashi is saying, is always in the southwest. Then therefore, the moon is going to be south of the sun. The problem with that explanation is that it doesn't really, at least the surface understanding of Rashi, doesn't seem to fit with the fact, because the fact is the moon is not always in the southwest corner. What it is the orbit of the moon is, it's more or less parallel to that of the sun. It's a couple of degrees off, it's about 5 degrees off. So the Rambam describes in Hilchos Kiddush HaChodesh the method of calculating the moon's latitude, which is to say how far north or south of the sun it is. So it's always going to be within about 5 degrees to the north or to the south of the sun. And therefore, during the winter, when the sun is setting in the southeast, the moon is also going to be in that general area. And in the summertime when it sets in the northwest, then the moon is going to be fairly close to that. So what does Rashi mean when he says that the moon is always in the southwest corner, such that sometimes it'll be north or south of the moon? So it's a very difficult Rashi to understand. Rabbeinu Hananel here has an explanation that maybe you can fit into Rashi's words as well. He says that essentially, he first of all learns that Yemos HaChama and Yemos HaGshamim over here doesn't mean, we usually think of Yemos HaChama, the summertime, as running from Nisan until Tishrei approximately, and Yemos HaGshamim running from Tishrei until Nisan. He brings a proof for this from the Yerushalmi, that here actually we mean from Tavis to Tammuz and from Tammuz to Tavis respectively. And the gist of his explanation is that during the time from Tavis until Tammuz, the sun is every day progressively setting a little further north than it did the day before. Meanwhile, the moon, in order to be visible, has to be setting a little bit after the sun. If it sets at the same time as the sun or any time before it, it's not going to be visible that evening anyway. So each day at that time of year, then the moon is a little bit further south than the sun, in the sense that it's still it's a little bit earlier in its orbit where the at the point where the sun was a few days before, and vice versa during the so therefore you can say that so therefore you it, it, it therefore you can speak of that as being to the south of the sun, whereas whereas from Tammuz to Tavis, what you have, or rather actually then we would say that's north of the sun, because each day the sun is going progressively further north and the moon is at that position already, essentially. And then in the summertime, meaning he says from Tammuz to Tavis, it would be the other way around. The sun is getting progressively, days are getting progressively shorter. Every day the sun is setting a little further south of where it was before. And again, the moon has to be a little bit ahead of it, because it's a little bit behind it, rather, because it's only set it, and it has to be a little bit behind it, because the moon sets after the sun. Therefore, we can speak of it as being to the north of the sun. So maybe that can be made to fit in the words of Rashi as well. The Rambam in Pirush HaMishnah says a third possibility. We're not talking about, when we say the Tzfona or the Drama, we don't mean the position of the moon relative to the sun. It's true, that really doesn't have anything to do with the season. But rather, it means we ask them, where in the sky did you see, which part of the sky did you see the new moon in? So during the summertime, it's going to be more in the northern part, because again, the sun is going to set there. It's going to set in the northern part of the northwestern part of the sky. Therefore, the moon is going to be within a few degrees one way or the other of that. And during the summertime, it's going to be, during the wintertime, rather, it's going to be setting someplace in the southwest. Therefore, the moon is also going to be someplace in the southwest within a few degrees of that. So those are various ways of understanding our Gemara. Okay, continues the Gemara. Tanan Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa. Now, we said that one of the things we asked them is how high the moon was. Now, of course, you know, you can talk how high it is in terms of actual degrees, but your average person is not necessarily going to know how to say that. So people would usually talk about the height of the moon off the ground in terms of certain objects. Like it looks like X number of objects of a certain kind of object above the horizon. So Tanan Rabbanan, Echad Oymer Gavoya Beis Maudeus. If one of them says that he saw the moon, that in his estimation, it was two mardeus above the horizon. A mardea literally means an ox goad, which is a stick with a pointy metal tip that they would use to goad an ox to go the direction it's supposed to go when you're plowing or whatever. So apparently those had a standard size and people would use them as a way of estimating heights. The Rambam, when he brings this halacha, instead mentions koimos, which means stories of a building. Same idea, in other words. So one of them estimates that it was two maudeus, or two stories, or whatever tall, high off the ground. The echad omeg gimel, and the other one says it was three. Eidos and kayemes, such an eidos is still valid. The difference between two and three is not that big. So fine, you know, you can't expect them to get it down to the exact fraction. It means they mean essentially the same thing. Echad omeg gimel ve'echad omeg hey, but if one of them says it was three maudeus off the ground and the other one says it was five eidos and betela, then their eidos is batel because that's too far apart. We can't accept such eidos. Avam mitzdarfen la'eidos acheres. However, we don't passel either of these eidim. We say each of them can combine together with another eid who says similar to him. So if we had one said three, one said five, then fine, we're going to disqualify their eidos because they don't match. But we'll say, let's say to the one who said five, fine, if he finds somebody else who says five or four or six, because again, we're saying that it can be one unit apart, then fine, that will be a valid eidos and he can come back in and based in will interrogate him to get together with the other eid again. Tosfos points out, if you had two pairs of Adim contradicting each other, if you had, for example, one pair said that it was three and the other one said that it was five, then we might not be able to accept the either Adus, because which one are we going to accept necessarily? And we might even say there's even an opinion in the Gemara in Masech Shavuos that in such a case we can't ever accept Adus from either of them again, because it means that one of them is lying and we don't know which one. But that's why we're saying over here that Tosfos points out that's what forced Rashi to say that what we mean is we don't mean that the two of them in the future necessarily can say Eidos together. What we mean that one of them, since he's only contradicted by one, fine, that's not enough to disqualify him as an Eid in the future. He can combine with somebody else and they have a valid Eidos HaKodesh. Okay. Turn it up on him. We learn in a Braisa. If the Eidim say Re'inuhu Bamayim, if they say we saw the reflection of the moon in the water, or Re'inuhu Ba'ashoshis, or we saw it through a lantern has glass panels around it, so we saw it through that, we saw it like through a glass lantern or a glass window or something, or Ashoshis can also mean a mirror, so it can mean they saw it reflected in a mirror, Re'inuhu Ba'ovim, or we saw it behind the clouds. So in all those cases, they can't say ages for it. You have to actually see the actual moon. If they say they saw half of it in the water, or half of it behind the clouds, or half of it through a window reflected in a mirror or whatever, then also they can't say ages. So you might ask, why do we need that last part? If they can't even say Eidos on it when they saw the entire thing reflected in the water or what have you, why would we think they could say Eidos when they only saw half of it reflected? You're right. What the Braisa means is suppose that they saw half of it in the water and half of it in the sky. So let's say, for example, so the Ran, I think it is, gives an example. Let's say they noticed they saw half of it reflected in the water. Then they looked up to see where the reflection is coming from. And at that point, the half that was reflected in the water now is covered with a cloud, and now they see the other half. So they saw half of it in the sky, but only half. The other half they saw reflected in the water. That's not good enough. Similarly, if they saw half of it reflected in the glass and half of it in the sky, also in the Eidim, they can't say Eidos on that. That's not a valid Eidos that Beistin will accept. They require them to see the actual moon, the actual complete crescent of the moon in the sky. Turn it up on, we learn in a Braisa. Another case, what if the Eidim say Re'inuhu v'shuv loy Re'inuhu? If they say we saw the moon and then we didn't see it, and all of they can't say Eidos on it. That's why not? What do we expect? That they have to continue seeing it the whole time? Obviously, the point is once they saw it once, that's good enough for them to come and say Eidos. So isn't kol hachi chazul lava ozli? Does it have to be that while they're going to Beis Din, they have to see it the whole time? Of course not. Abaya hachi karma. Abaya says right. What the Braisa means is, if they say Re'inuhu me'elenu, we saw it like this without even thinking to look. We just happened to notice it. V'shavnu l'roisim midatenu, then we went to actually look and focus on it to see it to actually be able to focus on details of it to say Eidos. V'loi Re'inuhu, and then we didn't see it. Ein me'idin olav, they can't say Eidos on such a sight. My timer, Amor, why is that? Because we might say Kuvisa de Iva Ba'alma Hu Dechazi, they may have just seen a round piece of cloud that resembled the moon, and then that's why when they looked up they didn't see it, because already then the cloud moved or broke apart or whatever. So they don't have to see it the whole time, but at least when they first see it, they have to know that this is the moon, which is not the case in our case over here. Okay. The Mishnah says, once they interrogated the Eidim and they have a valid Eidos HaKodesh, Rosh Beis Din Omer Mekodesh, the head of the Beis Din, the Nasi or the Av Beis Din, whatever, says Mekodesh, says that the Rosh Chodesh is sanctified. And in Achra, Mekodesh, Mekodesh, and everybody answers after him, Mekodesh, Mekodesh, as we're going to see in the Gemara. The Rambam seems to have a different view. He says that Beis Din says Mekodesh HaKodesh. Okay. Now, whether the moon was visible in its time, meaning the night after the evening after the 29th, or whether not, whether it wasn't visible that night, whether because of clouds, whether because it wasn't too soon after the molad, etc. Nevertheless, Beis Din is still Makadish. So on the 30th or the 31st, respectively, they say Makodesh. Rabbi Lozabar of Tzadik Omer, but Rabbi Lozabar of Tzadik says no. If the moon was not visible at its proper time, and therefore it's going to be a 30-day month, ain mekadshinos. Say they do not have to be based in. Does not have to be mekadoshit. Shekar kidshuhu shamayim, because they were already mekadoshit mina shamayim. Given that a month can't be more than 30 days long, then automatically that means that the 31st is Rosh Chodesh, even without based in here on earth declaring it, and therefore there's no need to be mekadoshit. By the way, Masechta Sofrim mentions a bracha that they would say. It mentions that they would have a cup of wine, and they'd make almost like a miniature kiddush then, with a bracha on the wine and a special bracha to Hashem for renewing the month. So it wasn't just that the Rosh based it says Mekodesh and everybody answers Mekodesh Mekodesh. They actually made a whole ceremony out of it. In addition, also the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin when it was a 30-day month. Then they had a special suda to mark the occasion in order that everybody should know that it was a 30-day month. Everybody that is in the area, everybody in Yerushalayim. So they'd have what's called suda ibra chodesh, a special suda to mark that it was a 30-day Rosh Chodesh, that it was a 30-day month. So the Gemara said Rosh based in Chula. We said in the Mishnah that the Rosh based in says Mekodesh, and everybody else answers Mekodesh, Mekodesh. Menahani Mili, where do we know that this is how you're supposed to do it? Omer Rav Chiya bar Gamda, Omer Rav Yosi bar Shol, Omer Rebbe, Omer Rav Yosi ben Shol, Omer Rebbe, Omer Kro, because the Pasuk says, Vaydaber Moshe es Moyade Hashem, it says Moshe spoke the Moyadim, the appointed times of Hashem, and the Moyadim also includes Rosh Chodesh. So therefore, Mekantra Rosh Basin, Omer Mekodesh. So since it says Vaydaber Moshe, from here we learn that the Rosh Basin, where Moshe was the Rosh Basin of his times, says Mekodesh. Then we said V'chol Omer En Acher Mekodesh Mekodesh. Why does everybody repeat the word twice after him? Menolon, where do we know that from? Omer Apapa, because the same pasuk continues. Asher Tikru, not the same pasuk, a different pasuk says Asher Tikru Oysam. The word oisam is written in the Sefer Torah without a vav, so kori be atem. So we can read it as the word atem, you, meaning that you plural should all call them by saying mekodesh mekodesh. Rav Nachman Yitzchok says I have a different pasuk for it. Elohim moyadoi. The previous pasuk says the same pasuk continues. Elohim moyadoi. These are my moyadim. Meaning, therefore, since it says Elohim moyadoi, then they have to declare the moyad. So heim yomru moyadoi. So it means they, the Jewish people, because otherwise, why does it have to say hey? And why does it have to say heim? Elohim moyadoi. So Elohim moyadoi teaches us that the heim, they, the Jewish people who are there, yomru moyadoi should say that these are the moyadim. So that's what we're saying. Everybody else who's there answers Mekodesh, Mekodesh, right? The Pashas includes the rest of the Beis Din as well. I mean, the Rosh Beis Din is not sitting there by himself. Yeah. Mekodesh, Mekodesh, Tre Zimni Lomali. Okay, so that explains why everybody else has to answer. Kamasher Tikru Oysam or Elohim Moyadoi, but Mekodesh, Mekodesh, Tre Zimni Lomali. Why do they say Mekodesh twice? So Dichtim, Mekra E Kodesh, because it says callings of holiness. So therefore, we learn from that they should say twice Mekodesh. We said in the Mishnah of Elazar of Tzadik Omer, Imlo Nirbiz Mana in Mekadshinos. So he said that if it was a 30-day month and Rosh Chodesh is on the 31st, then they don't have to be Mekadoshit, because he said in the Mishnah, Shekvapid Shuhu Shamayim, it was ready to Skadish Mina Shamayim, because we said, because at that it can't be longer than 30 days, so therefore it means that it was already determined as that in Shamayim that it's going to be Rosh Chodesh. So Tanya, we learn in a Braisa. Plimoy Omer, Plimoy says exactly the other way around, exactly the opposite of Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadik. Bizmano in Mekadshino, so Shaloi Bizmano Mekadshino, so just the opposite. If it's a 29-day month, they do not need to be Mekadosh it, because then it doesn't need Chizuk. Because then the default length of a month is 29 days. So there's no reason to mean we don't need to be Mechazik it by publicly announcing that it's Mekodesh. The Shaloi Bizmani, Mekadshinose, but when they had to make a 30-day month, then they need to be Mekadosh it in order to strengthen it. So everybody realizes it's not just accidentally they forgot to announce or whatever, it really is a 30-day month.
It's 30 and 31, right? Either one.
Well, it means, in other words, the Rosh Chodesh, so if it's a 30-day month, so we keep Rosh Chodesh on the 30th and on the 31st. And the idea of it is, again, you know, the 30th day could have belonged to the previous month, could have belonged to the next month. It sort of belonged to the previous month. It sort of belongs to the next month. Therefore, we keep it as the first day of Rosh Chodesh. So now, Plimoy is saying, if you only have one day Rosh Chodesh on the 30th, there's no need to say Mekodesh on it. Because then fine, it's the 30th day, it's Rosh Chodesh. But if you have to make a two-day Rosh Chodesh, if you have to make that Rosh Chodesh is the 30th and the 31st, then you need to declare on the 31st Mekodesh. Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon Omer, Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon says a fourth opinion. Bein kach o bein kach ein mekadshin otzi. Either way, Beis Din is not required to ever say Mekodesh. Shenema, because so we have four different opinions. You have the Tanakama of our Mishnah who says that you're always Mekadesh it. Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadik who says only when it's a Chodesh Choser. Plimoy only when it's a Chodesh Molei. And Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon, neither. So four different opinions. So why does he say you never have to be Mekadosh the Chodesh? Shenema, because the Pasuk says V'kidashtim es shnas ha-chamishim. The Pasuk says you should make the 50th year holy as Yovel. And we learn from that. He says, Shonim at the Mekadosh, V'at the Mekadosh Chodoshim. You only need to make years holy. You have to declare at the beginning of Yovel, this year is holy as Yovel. The implication is that you don't have to do that at the beginning of every month to declare that the month, that the Rosh Chodesh is holy.
After 7 years, no Rosh Chodesh is holy.
By 7 years, no, Shemitah is holy, but it doesn't say that you have to call it. Okay. Who is the halacha like? Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, halacha k'Rav Elazar ben Tzadik. The halacha is like Rav Elazar ben Tzadik, so only a chodesh choser, when it's a one day Rosh Chodesh on the 30th, do they need to be mekadesh it, not when it's a 30-day month.
They're
not like the Chachamim in our Mishnah. You know what? Here, we were talking a couple of days ago about where you have Yochid V'Rabim. We don't always say Halacha K'Rabim. There you go. Here's an example of it where we go according to the Yochid. Omer Abaya Afanan Nami Tanena. Abaya says, as a matter of fact, we see that the beginning of the third Perek, which we'll learn tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, says, Ra'uhu based in B'chol Yisrael, what if based in and all the Jewish people saw it? So let's say it happened to be that the Molad was long enough before that by the time you come to the night of the 29th, it's clearly visible and then high above the horizon. Nechgru Edim, or if they interrogated the Edim, V'lo Yispiku Loima Mekodesh Ad Shechosheka, nevertheless, they didn't have the chance to say Mekodesh before it got dark on the 30th. Hareza Ma'ubar, then the din is that the Chodesh is Ma'ubar, we say, in other words, even though everybody saw it the night after the 29th, or we interrogated the Edom during the day on the 30th. Nevertheless, you can't be Mekadosh the Chodesh at night, as we're going to learn at the beginning of the next parak, and therefore it becomes a Chodesh Ma'ubar.
It means
it's going to be a 30-day Rosh, it's going to be 30 days, and it's going to be 2 days Rosh Chodesh. Yeah. So the implication is Ma'uber ain Mekodesh Loi. The implication is it's going to be Ma'uber, meaning, in other words, that as soon as it becomes night, it's Ma'uber. But it's Mekodesh, I'm Mekodesh Loi, but it's not Mekodesh, because it becomes Mekodesh the next day. But in other words, Beis Din doesn't have to say at that point Mekodesh. So that Mishnah seems to show that Halacha is, in fact, like Rav Elazar ben Tzadik, because otherwise it should have said Mekodesh or Ma'uber or something like that. The answer is Loi, not necessarily. The answer is the Gemara says no. Ma'uber it's Dirichalai. No, you could say there's no Chiddush. Maybe that Mishnah goes according to the Chachamim of our Mishnah. It's not mentioning that they have to be Mekadosh because there's no Chiddush in that. The fact that it's Ma'uber, it's Dirichalai, is the real Chiddush that the Mishnah wants to highlight for us. Sakurat Chamina, you might have thought, Hoyover Ra'ul based in Vachol Yisrael, since based in and everybody saw the moon, Ifarsma, it's become so well known. Everybody knows that the moon was visible the night after the 29th. So now if we have to make it a 30-day month, it's going to look strange. V'loyla ebruha, so we shouldn't. We should say in that case, it's valid to make it a 29-day month. Kamash Malan, and therefore the Mishnah is telling us that not, because the fact is you have to be Mekadosh it during the daytime, not at night, as we're going to learn on Chafei Yom Adbei,
Beis
Hashem.
Even though the witnesses actually
see it. So again, the normal situation is that they don't usually see it during the daytime. The normal situation is you only see the moon after the new moon after Shkia. So the normal situation is the Edom come to Beis Din the following morning, and Beis Din interrogates them, and then they declare Rosh Chodesh sometime during that day. In this scenario, one case is everybody saw it, and therefore you have a whole bunch of Edom coming, or even based in themselves can serve as Edim, as we'll talk about at the beginning of the next parak. Or another possibility is that it was a regular case. The moon is not so clearly visible, but it's visible enough that Edim came. Either way, the point is, let's say they didn't have a chance to say Mekodesh by the end of the 30th, then still it becomes a 30-day month. So the point is, we're saying that maybe that's the main Chiddush of the Mishnah, is that point that we shouldn't think in that case it's going to be a Chodesh Chaser because it was so visible. Nevertheless, we're still going to say it's a Chodesh Molei. The Mishnah is not focusing on the question of whether you need to be Mekadosh or not. So we're saying that maybe the Mishnah shows like Rav Elazar ben Tzadik. We're saying not necessarily. it may be that they do actually have to declare Mekodesh the next day, but the Mishnah is not mentioning it because there's no Chiddush in that.
And if they have to drag it out, when it's close to the end, they can drag it. If they need, because of Yom Kippur, they can drag it out.
So I guess if they needed to, yeah, they could drag it out. If they need to, if they need to make a 30-day Elul, like we talked about in the previous Perek, for example, because of the Yom Tovim falling on certain days of the week, then to begin with, they wouldn't be accepting Egypt. To begin with, they would say we're closed for business today, and no Edim are coming or whatever.
But sometimes we said they can be ma'ayim.
They can question them into saying something different. Yeah, but the case that we're talking about at the beginning of the next paragraph, where everybody saw it or where they did interrogate the Edim, they fully intended for it to be a 29-day month. Just things got delayed, and they didn't end up saying Mekodesh in time. Since you can't be Mekadesh the Chodesh at night, for reasons that we're going to discuss at the beginning of the next parak, then therefore it becomes a 30-day month. Okay, so we don't have a proof from that Mishnah. Nevertheless, we still follow what Shmuel says, that the halacha is like Rabbi Elazar Reb Tzadik, and therefore Beis Din does not have to say Mekodesh after a 30-day month, only after a 29-day month. Okay, Mishnah says, Dmus Tzuris look. Now, we said before that they interrogated the Eidim. So here's one way, here's how Rabbi Gamliel would do it. Ram Gamliel had pictures or images of the moon in different phases, the tabla on a board over koisel and on the wall, Ba'ala Yossi, on the second floor of his house or of his basin shtib or whatever. The second floor in those times was a lot of times the ground floor was where everybody lived. It would be very crowded. It wasn't like a place for large crowds to gather. If you needed a place for crowds to be able to gather, like over here, for example, Kiddush HaChodesh, then they often use the second floor of the house for that. So that's why we're mentioning over here that was Ali Yossi. Oh, okay. As long as the floor is built strongly enough, then it won't fall in. Yeah, but that's not a question of stronger. I mean, you can build a building strong enough. I'm sure Rabbi Gamliel could afford to make sure that the building is solidly built. But whatever. Yeah. So he had in the second floor over there, he had these pictures or these images of the moon in different phases. Shabahen Mare Sahed Yotis, he would use those to show simple people. Imagine you have simple people come to Beis Din. You start asking them questions. Was it north? Was it south? Was it high? Was it low? Or whatever. They're going to get all confused. They're not going to know what to say. So instead, he'd show them a picture. Did it look to you like this, or did it look to you like this? And obviously, again, he calculated ahead of time which one is the correct answer, and therefore he could use that. So the Gemara asked, to me, Shari, is that allowed to have pictures of the moon? It says in a pasuk, Loi sasun iti, don't make with me, and that means, among other things, Loi sasun kinmus shamashai, don't make things that are the image of the things that serve me. So the moon is a servant of Hashem. How are you allowed to make a picture of it? Amar Abaya. So Abaya says, "Loi osra Torah ela shamoshim she'efshalasis kamosan." You know what the Torah is answering is the kind of shamoshim, the kind of things used to serve Hashem that you're able to actually duplicate. Nobody can actually duplicate the moon; it's too big. So therefore, what the Torah is telling you is that you cannot make replicas of the kalim of the Beis Hamikdash, which are those are human size. You could conceivably make replicas of them, and the Torah is telling you not to. So hold on, we're going to get to that point too. Kedatanya, as we learn in a Braisa, lo yasa adam bayis tavnis heichel. A person is not allowed to build a house in the image of the heichel, meaning the same width and height, and then floor plan and whatever. Achsadra tavnis ulam, or an achsadra, which is an entryway into the house. An achsadra usually it's closed in on three sides and open on the fourth. So he can't make it similar to the ulam, where the ulam of the heichel was the same kind of thing. It was completely open on the front side. They had a parochas there, and then the other three sides is closed in with walls, like a porch, sort of. Chotzer keneged azara. A person is not allowed to make a chotzer similar to the azara. Shulchan keneged shulchan, to make a shulchan similar to the shulchan in the Beis Hamikdash, menorah keneged menorah, or menorah like the one in the Beis Hamikdash. Aval oisa shochamisha v'shol shisha v'shol shmona, but so a person is allowed to make a menorah of five or six or eight lamps, and that even if they make it similar in style to the one of the one of the Beis Mikdash, that's fine because it doesn't have the same number of branches. The menorah they bring out every year in 770, for example, was made to resemble somewhat the one in the Beis Mikdash with the Griyim and Kaftodim and Parochim and whatever. But that's fine because it has 9 branches rather than 7. So you're allowed to if it has a different number of branches. Now you're not allowed to make one with you're not allowed to make one with 7 branches, even if it's made out of other kinds of metals. Because the fact is the menorah in the Beis Mikdash does not have to be made out of gold. If it's made out of any kind of metal, it's still kosher. So therefore, so even if you make one out of a different kind of metal, it's still something that would have been kosher to use in the Beis Mikdash, and therefore it's no good. Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda, I'm afshal eitz lo yaseh. Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda says you're also not allowed to make a 7-branch menorah out of wood, because he holds that wood is kosher for the kalim of the Beis Mikdash. It's a machlokas in a few places in Shas. Kederach she'asa malchei beis chashminoi. He says that's what the kings of the family of Chashminoi did when they recaptured the Beis Mikdash, and the menorah had been taken away by the Greeks. So he says they had to make a new menorah, and all they could afford at that point was wood. So he says you see that wood is kosher for the klei shoris. You can't bang it out. No. So what it is that certain of the details that apply to the menorah only apply when it's made out of gold. The fact that it has to be hammered out of one piece, and the fact that it has to have the decorations, the gviim, kaftodim, and prachim, and that has to weigh a kikar and so on and so forth. All of those only apply when it's made out of gold. When it's made out of any other material, yeah, then it can be made. However, so the Beis Mikdash says it could be made out of wood. So they said to him, is that you bring a proof from there? They didn't use wood. They took iron spits. And again, it's calling the Tosis points out why are we calling them spits? Is the pastures, they weren't necessarily used as spits for roasting, but they're like spits in that they're smooth. Again, they don't have gvim, kaftodim, and prochim, because you don't need those on a non-gold menorah. So they took iron spits, and they plated them with tin in order to at least look a little bit nicer, at least to make as much as beautiful as they could. Because again, the Chachamim hold, the clay shardis must be made out of metal. If they're made out of any non-metal, then the Chachamim hold their pulses. Therefore, they had no choice but to use iron, and to make it look a little bit nicer, they plated it with tin. So it wasn't wood. Some of the Mephoshim actually say that what happened was eventually the tin tarnished and it looked from a distance, it looked dark, so it looked like wood. So they're saying to Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda, you're thinking that it was wood. It wasn't, it was tin, but it tarnished, and so it ended up looking like wood. Hashiru, later on, when the Jewish people became richer, Asom Shokesef. And then they made a new menorah out of silver. Chazru Hashiru, and then when they became even richer, Asom Shalzav, then they made a menorah out of gold like the way it's supposed to be. The point is, the Chachamim say the menorah was never made out of wood, because had it been made out of wood, it would have been possible for use in the Beis Mikdash. So according to them, l'chora, you could make a 7-branch menorah out of wood. You just can't make it out of any kind of metal. Okay. So therefore, so Abaye is saying, when the Torah says loy sasun iti, it means you're not allowed to make replicas of the kalim of the Beis Mikdash. So there's no problem with a picture of the moon. However, the Gemara asked, "V'shamoshin sheyef shalasas k'mosin mishari." So you're telling me that any servant of Hashem that you can't make an actual duplicate of, you would be mutter to make a picture or an engraving or sculpture or whatever of? Well, Hatanya, we learn in another brisa on the same pasuk when it says "loy sasun iti" means "loy sasun k'mos shamoshai hamashamshin lefanai b'morim," means don't make replicas of my servants who serve before me in the heavens. L'chora, that means that means the sun and the moon and so forth. Amar Abaye, so Abaye says, fine, but loy osra Torah ela d'mus arba ponim b'hadi adodi. What the Torah is asking for that purpose is you're not allowed to make a sculpture or whatever of the 4 faces of the Kerubim altogether. So you're going to have a Chayis HaKodesh, which Yechezkel describes them, that they have the bodies of their, they have human bodies with wings, and then they have 4 faces, Pnei Aryeh, Pnei Sher, Pnei Nesher. So you're not allowed to make those 4 together.
Each one had four faces,
right. The idea is, the pasuk says, this way, whichever direction Hashem tells them to go, they can start going right away in that direction. They don't have to turn around. And of course, you know, tremendous things up in Kabbalah, what they represent, Lamata down here, the Pnei Aryeh is the source, is the Ruchniistic source of all the animals down here, the Pnei Nesher of all the birds, and so on and so forth, yeah. So that's what's also, nothing to do with the sun and the moon. So the Gemara says, "Ela me'ata pouts of Adam l'chudei tishrei." Well, by that logic, then it should be mutter to make a human image all by itself. Alamatanya. So why is it we learn in a brisa? Kol ha-partzuf is mutar and chutz mi-partzuf adam. You're allowed to make a sculpture or an image or whatever of any face, of any creature, except for a human face. So according to this, why should it be also? A human face is only one of the four faces of the Chayes HaKadosh, and you're saying it's only also to make the four of them together. Amar of Huna, Breidir of Idi, mi pirke de abaya shmi ali, what I learned from one of Abaya's drushas. A pirka is a drusha that would regularly give, in particular on Shabbos. So in Abaya's drusha, I learned that another meaning of loy sasun iti means loy sasun oisi. Don't make an image of me. Now Hashem, of course, is ein loy d'mus haguf, so you can't possibly make an image of Hashem himself. But what's the closest thing? A person. Nasa adam atzalmenu k'dmusenu. So to make a rendering of a person would be, like, the Torah is telling you, don't make that because a person has a certain resemblance, so to speak, to Hashem. So therefore, that's why that one all by itself is also. Tosfos says, therefore, so what it means is, in other words, that let's say what happens, for example, if you make something that has a human face together with other faces? So if it's the other three faces of the Chayes HaKodesh, then it's no good. But if you had a human face together with some others, all on the same image, then it might be mutter. Also, another possibility is, let's say you didn't make one yourself, or you didn't have one made for you. Let's say you found an image of a person. So depending, you might be able to keep it, but you're not allowed to add the other three faces to make something that resembles the Chayes HaKodesh out of it. So the Gemara asks, so far it sounds like we're saying there's no problem with making an image of the moon, because the moon is not one of the ones that you can duplicate, like one of the Kalim of the Bais Mikdash. It's not one of the Shamoshei HaMashamshim Lefanei B'morim, according to the definition so far, which means the Chayes HaKodesh. So far we're good. But the Gemara asks, Shar Shamoshin Mishari, is it in fact allowed to make images of other servants of Hashem? Well, Tanya, another brisa says loy sasun iti means loy sasun kidmus shamosh amashamshan lafanei b'morim kigoin, and it lists examples kigoin efanim usrofim v'chayis hakodesh or malachei hashoris. So it's not just the chayis hakodesh that have four faces. Any of these malachim that are described in the psukim over there, you wouldn't be allowed to make an image of them. So the answer is Amar Abaya. Yeah, that's the point. Loy osur Torah ela shamoshin shemadur elyon. What the Torah is saying is osur is the ones that serve Hashem in the upper realm. Yeah. In other words, so Rashi explains that the Gemara tells us in the Sefta Chagiga that there are seven levels of the heavens, seven rakim. The sun, the moon, etc., are near the bottom. They're in the second rakia. So the Gemara describes over there the first rakia is just like a curtain that covers them when we don't see them. The second one is where they're actually located. Meanwhile, the malachim are further up. Some of the malachim are up in the seventh one, some in different ones, but whatever. They're higher up than the sun and the moon. So therefore, the ones in the upper ones you're not allowed to make, like the Ifanim and the Chayis and so forth, but not the sun and the moon. So far, we're saying would be fine. However, the Gemara asks, should mother attack and be shari? Still, you're telling me that the ones that are in the lower realms, like in the lower rakia, are allowed to be made? V'hatanya, we learn in a brisa. The pasuk says, "So you have in the aseres hadibros lo yisasa b'chol pesel b'chol tmona asher b'shamayim mimal v'asher b'aretz mitachas." So what does that mean? Asher b'shamayim, when it says you're not allowed to make an image of what's in heaven, l'rabis chamo l'vona kechavim v'azolis, that comes to include the sun and the moon and the stars and the planets. Mimal l'rabis malachei asharis, and when it continues, asher b'shamayim mimal, up above, includes the malachei asharis, which again are higher than the sun and moon, etc. So you're not allowed to make pictures of the sun and the moon. So my answer is fine. Kitanya hila avdam. That's talking about you're not allowed to make them in order to worship them. If you're making them to worship them, of course you're not allowed to. Never mind those things. After the shoshal kot nami, then you wouldn't even be allowed to make an image of a tiny worm in order to worship it. So why would we have to stress the sun and moon and so forth as though like those have a special status of their own? Shoshal means a worm. Yeah. I think Moses says einoch nami. You're right. Vahot detanya. As in fact, we learn in a brisa. The same brisa continues. Asher ba'aretz, when it says you're not allowed to make images of things on earth. And again, we're not talking about that you're stam making them as art. We're talking about you're making them, a person is making them in order to worship them. So asher ba'aretz, that's on the earth, l'rabes horem agvois yamim u'naharis, that comes to include if a person were to make sculptures of the, or pictures of mountains and hills or seas or rivers, afikim, or valleys. It actually translates afikim as water sources, like creeks or whatever, the ge'oyes, or valleys. And mitachas, l'rabes shalter cotton. And the word asher ba'aretz mitachas comes to include even the tiniest worm. So yeah, if you're making any of those in order to worship them, then yeah, you're not allowed to make them. That's what the Braisa is saying. It's not necessarily saying anything about that there's a problem with making an image of the sun or moon where you're not making it for worship. Still, the Gemara asks, Vasiya greatest in Ishari. Still, you're telling me to make an image of the sun or the moon would be mutter? Well, Hatanya, yet another Braisa says, again, focusing on the pasuk Lois Sasun Iti, Lois Sasun Pimus Shamoshai Hamashamshan Lafan. I don't make images of the servants that serve before me, kigoyin chamo lavona kechavim mazalis, which, for example, the sun, the moon, the stars, and the planets. So you're not allowed to make images of those. So we're back to the question then, how did Rav Gamliel have pictures of the moon to show the Edim? Now, an obvious answer could be that you're only also to make a picture of the moon, of the complete moon, of the moon. After all, when we see the moon as a crescent, it's not really a crescent. The rest of it is there, it's just not lit. So you could. However, the most of the Mephoshim say the Gemara doesn't take that possibility, because the Gemara assumes that when we're saying you're not allowed to make pictures or images of them, it includes in the way in which we normally see them. We normally see the moon. We don't always see the moon whole. Sometimes we see it as a crescent. Therefore, based on that, crescents would also be awesome. Now, of course, we're going to ask, what about photography? What about, we see that they draw pictures for kids all the time involving the sun and the moon and so forth. So let's get through the Gemara, and then we'll talk about the practicalities of the halacha. A lot of these things, there's a huge number of different opinions about many details of what we're talking about over here.
Right now we're saying that the Levana is considered
Shamashah Mashamshin Lefana Bamarim, and you're not allowed to make pictures of it. So how is Rav Gamliel allowed to have these pictures to show the Edim? So the answer is Shiny Rav Gamliel, the Achirim also. So the answer could be it's different for Rav Gamliel. He had that Goyim made it for him. Now Tosfos says, okay, what about Amiral and Nochri? Tosfos says that over here, because it's necessary for a mitzvah, then therefore maybe it would be allowed. Okay. So the problem with that is, even if Goyim made it for him, we have an example of Rabbi Yehuda who had a ring with a stamp on it where Goyim had made it, and it was a stamp that had a picture of a person. Shmuel said to Rabbi Yehuda, Shinin, a sharp one, which was Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shmuel's nickname for Rabbi Yehuda, Smi, Eini Dedain, put out the eye of this one, in other words, do something to destroy that it shouldn't be a full image. So we see that even though Rabbi Yehuda had the signet ring was made for him by Goyim, nevertheless, Shmuel is saying you're not allowed to keep it when it's still intact. So what if Rabbi Gamliel's pictures of the moon were made by Goyim? The answer is, the difference is that there the stamp on the seal was sticking out. Now you have, there's two ways that a signet ring can be made. You can have where the stamp on the ring sticks out, and then when you press it into wax or clay or whatever, then you have a recessed image below the surface. Or you can have the other way around, where the stamp on the ring is recessed, and then when you stamp it on the clay or whatever, then it makes a protruding image. Right. So, for example, you have, let's say, for example, the Matseva, the Friedrich Rebbe, and of the Rebbe, yeah, they have the letters are below the surface. But you have, as you're walking along over there, you can see a few older Matsevas where they have the other way around, the letters are sticking out. Right. So, but the same thing you can have when it comes to signet rings, you can have the same thing. They can be made in either of those ways. By the way, you have in many places in Chassidus where it talks about the idea that the relationship between us and Hashem is similar to that as well. You have a stamp that sticks out is gonna be recessed, and a stamp that's recessed is gonna stick out, and that relates to, for example, in the Siddurim Dach, it talks about it in connection with putting on tefillin. Like we know when we put on tefillin, Hashem puts on tefillin, and you have a relationship over there. Like the what's sticking out by us is what's recessed by Hashem, and vice versa, which represents various things in various things in Moichin and Midas and Olam Esel Yonim and so on and Zoh and Malchus and so on and so forth. Yeah. Anyway. Okay. So therefore, Hosam Chosme Boilat Tava in Rabbi Yehuda's case, the signet stuck out of the ring, meaning that it would make a recessed image when you stamp it. The reason why Reb Shmuel is telling him to destroy the image is because of Chashad, so people don't think that he's using it as his personal Avodah Zarah. So Tosfos points out, we're not worried about the Chashad of people are going to think he was over on Lo Sasim. We're worried that people are going to think he's over on actually worshipping it as Avodah Zarah. So, Kedetanya, as we learn in a brisa, Tabas Choisme Boilet, if you have a ring where the signet sticks out, also Lanicha, you're not allowed to wear such a ring because, again, because of the Chashad, people are going to think he's wearing it and he's worshipping it as Avodah Zarah in secret or something. But you're allowed to stamp with it because when you stamp with it, then the image that it makes, let's say you have a picture of a person on it, so the image that it makes is recessed below the surface and that would be fine.
If
the signet is made to stick out, so it sticks out of the surface of the ring, such that when you stamp it into wax or whatever, it makes a recessed image. It makes an image that's below the surface. Yeah, so that would be allowed. If it's the other way around, if the signet is recessed, you're allowed to wear the ring because then nobody's going to think that you're worshiping it as a Avodah Zarah. But you're not allowed to stamp with it because when you stamp with it, you have a 3D image that sticks out from the wax or whatever. So therefore, so we see that there's a problem of chashad, whereas with Rav Gamliel, you don't have, so first the question is, don't we have a problem with Rav Gamliel with chashad? But first the question is, umi chashin l'chashta, are we in fact concerned about chashad when you have something that might be seen as Avodah Zarah, that we have to be concerned that if somebody has it, for example, here, if a person has a ring with such a signet that people might suspect him of worshipping Avodah Zarah? You have the Shof v'Yosef shul in Nahudah. So what is Shof v'Yosef? Rashi says, first of all, it might have been the name of the neighborhood. The second explanation is Shof v'Yosef means it was destroyed and rebuilt. Literally, it means it was moved and it settled. In particular, when Yechoniah and the Jewish people who were there with the Choresh Vamaska, who were taken with him into Golos 11 years before the Churban Bayis Rishon, when they left Eretz Yisrael in Golos, they took with them stones and dirt from your Shalayim, and they used those to build this shul when they came there to Babel, to show how precious Eretz Yisrael is to them. And the Shechina, the Gemara tells us elsewhere, the Gemara tells us in Megillah, that the Shechina was always located in that shul, more than in any other place. So in that Shof v'Yosef shul in Nahudah, the Havabe and Dauta, there was an image of the king there in the shul. The Hava Eili Rabu Shmuel v'Avoda Shmuel v'Levi, and yet Rav and Shmuel's father and Levi, all great Chachamim, went in Umatzlu Hasam, they daven in that shul. V'Leichayshi L'Chashta, they're not concerned about Chashad, that people are going to think they're worshiping the image of the king. The answer is Rabbim Shaini. The difference is when you have Rabbim davening in the shul, it's different. Nobody's going to think that the Rabbim are worshipping Avodah Zarah in public like that. But when you have a private person has a signet ring, then you might have to worry about it.
So they have to have it because of their mouth.
They probably have it. The mouth has probably required them to have it there, yeah. So the question is, Rav Gamliel Yochid, who knew and isn't Rav Gamliel a Yochid, why aren't we worried about his pictures of the moon?
In his house.
The reason is, Kivin the Nasi, who the reason is, because he's the Nasi, Shchichi, Rabim Gambe, you always have a lot of people in his house. You always have a lot of people coming and going. Therefore, that's the equivalent of there being Rabbi. Iboyesema, another answer, the Prokim Hava. Another answer is that Rav Gamliel's pictures of the moon were made out of pieces. They weren't whole pictures or sculptures or whatever. They were made out of pieces, like jigsaw puzzles. So therefore, there would be more of a heter for that. The Borisemali Slamed Oven. Yet another possibility is that Rav Gamliel made them in order to learn and in order to teach what the moon looks like in its different faces. Uchtiv, and the Pasuk says, Loi Silma Blasis, like it says about Kishuf, you're not allowed to learn Kishuf in order to do it. But you're allowed to learn it in order to teach what's allowed, what's not allowed. At the Paskin, for example, the members of the Sanhedrin had to know Kishuk, because they had to know if somebody's being accused of Kishuk, what exactly would make him Chayiv Misa and what wouldn't. So in the same thing over here, these were being made Leislamin. So now, with all of this Gemara over here, we have a tremendous amount of discussion about some of the details of these things. First of all, when we talk about, so we're saying in the end that there are rules and restrictions about making pictures of the sun and the moon and the stars and what have you. So first of all, there's a machloikas of Rishonim, are you allowed to make them flat? For example, you're allowed to draw a picture of the sun on a piece of paper. And one way you could look at it is, no, the sun is 3D. Why shouldn't you? The sun is 3D. You're making a 2D image of it on a paper. What's the problem? On the other hand, another way of looking at it is, the fact is, when we see the sun and the moon, we don't see them as 3D. They look flat in the sky to us. So therefore, that might be also as well. So in fact, it does talk about, the poskim talk about, that in fact, there are issues with making pictures of the sun and the moon. However, again, the Gemara is saying over here, you are allowed, first of all, it doesn't just mean drawing a circle. It would mean you're drawing it in a way that it's obviously recognizable as the sun or the moon. So if you just stand and draw a circle, that's nothing. But for example, if you draw a circle with rays around it, then that more represents the sun. So in fact, many people are tacky careful. Even when they have kids drawing or whatever, they won't have them draw a whole sun. They'll have them draw like the sun in the corner of the picture or whatever, where you only see a quarter of it. Another way of looking at it, though, is, again, we're saying in the Gemara over here, it is allowed, Leislamid. So therefore, for example, when you're teaching kids Parashas Vayeshev, and you're teaching them about Yosef's dream of the sun and the moon and the stars, then you might be able to illustrate it for that purpose, because you're doing it in order to teach them Torah. There are actually, I think the Ran talks about that maybe you don't have such a problem of Chashad nowadays, because who worships the sun and the moon nowadays? So maybe even the whole problem of Chashad doesn't exist so much anymore. The consensus of Poskim doesn't accept that, but nevertheless, we can use that as an extra degree of Heter where necessary. They talk about also, for example, would you be allowed to take and develop photos of the sun and the moon? So there also you have a consideration that there it's much less direct than actually drawing it. You're not actually physically taking a pen and drawing it on a piece of paper or whatever. You're using, you know, you're pressing a button on your camera or, you know, on your phone or whatever nowadays. And again, it gets developed internally. So it's more like a grumma. So maybe it's like not as direct a thing, and maybe there's more of a heter for that as well. Again, if you're doing it leislamid, you're doing it in order, and it doesn't just have to be in order to learn Torah. It could be also, for example, you're doing it, let's say, in order to learn, you know, you're doing it in order to learn astronomy, for example. So that might also be a valid reason to do it. Then you get to the question as far as sculptures and pictures of people. So first of all, you have, you can have, for example, what about dolls that are actually made to look like people? There are a few poskim who hold that, in fact, dolls would be usur, and you would actually have to destroy some part of the image, like we said over here, like Shmuel told Rabbi Huda. So you might have to, for example, knock out an eye or cut off an ear or something. Most of the poskim, though, say that dolls are not really such a problem. You use them to play with, you know, you don't, there's not, obviously not anything. Children also is obviously not really an issue of chashad, so therefore most of them are fine with it. Then you get into the question also of 2D pictures of people. So now you have. So first of all, when we're talking about over here images of people, are we talking about an image of the person of the complete person's body, or are we talking about just a head? So in fact, the Rosh, for example, allows just a head. As many people are saying on that. The Rabbi Yaakov Emdin has a tshuva where he says, first of all, we can't really be soymich on that. First of all, there are other Rishonim who disagree with the Rosh. Second of all, he says, even the Rosh might only allow it if you don't have all the facial features. But once you have all the facial features, then maybe not. And he tells of a case that happened in his times. We mentioned the other day the Maaseh Rekeach. We mentioned his vort about the names of the mountains that they did the Masuris on. He was a very important rob in his time. The signal fires that they had to announce when Rosh Chodesh is. We talked about the other day his vort about the names of the mountains. He was a very distinguished rob a couple hundred years ago. He was a rob in various cities in Poland, and then he was rob for some time in Amsterdam, and then eventually he left and moved to Eretz Yisrael. Before he moved to Amsterdam, so the Jews over there respected him so much, they had such covet for him, they actually had, they got the government to mint a medal that had a picture of him on one side and psukim, appropriate psukim from Tillim on the other side. And Rabbi Yaakov Emden says, I can't understand how they would be allowed to do that. I can't understand how the Maaser Rekeach would have allowed such a thing. It must be that it was done without his knowledge, because it's a 3D image on a coin. And then he discusses this whole matter over there. It's only a bust. It's only his head, and it's only his head and the top part. But nevertheless, according to the other poskim who disagree with the Rosh, such a thing should be also. So he says, actually, in the end, what happened was that the Dutch government changed their mind and ordered that all the coins should be hidden away. They shouldn't actually circulate or be used as medals or whatever. But they cared, because whatever, they had their own reasons. But the point is, Minashamayim is saying that it worked out that this way the Maaser Rekeach doesn't have a forbidden image of him circulating around. Well, Maisa, they haven't completely been destroyed. You can find some of them nowadays in coin catalogs, But then he goes on to tell an interesting story involving his father, the Chacham Tzvi. The Chacham Tzvi was also Rav of Amsterdam for a time. And then at one point he visited London, and the people over there really wanted a picture of him. But he didn't want to sit for a portrait because, again, of the concerns about the halachas over here. The upshot was that Rabbi Yaakov Emden writes, in the end, a Goyish artist memorized what my father looked like and then went and drew the picture without my father sitting for it. And that's how they have, this is how we have a picture nowadays of the Chacham Tzvi. And the Rabbi Yaakov Emden endorses it is Taka, fairly accurate likeness of him. But nevertheless, at least, you know, he wasn't like with his consent, kind of. It was done beside him. Bechlal, you have in previous generations, Gdolei Yisrael were particular about they didn't want to be drawn. You have, for example, the only reason we have a picture of the Alter Rebbe is because they drew one while he was in jail. The only reason we have a picture of the Tzemach Tzedek is because a goy peeked in through the window one Shabbos and then drew him, and so forth. So eventually, once photography came around, there were some chachamim who held that maybe that's a problem. So the consensus was that it's not, and that's how we have. Man, that's how Amadvar, you know, is well known that we take pictures all the time, and no, even full face pictures, and nobody has a problem with it. And that's how we have pictures of the Rebbe. We have pictures of many. So it's all with everything that we said here in the Gemara. There are considerable different opinions about many of the details. What exactly is and isn't allowed. So that's the point. One thing that makes it mutter is, first of all, pictures that we have, like photos or whatever. First of all, again, nobody drew them directly. It's more grammar. Even when they're drawn, like you have art or whatever, very often again, you have some poskim that say that 2D is fine, that 2D is fine, it would only 3D is sculpture that would be a problem. And you have many times they do only from the side, like you have the pictures on coins or side view of the person. There's more of a heter for that, because again, you only have one eye, for example, you don't have both eyes. So for all those various reasons, you have the various heterim, but nevertheless, you still do have some poskim that are uncomfortable with certain details of these things. A couple of years back, for example, the Israeli government started putting out a series of medals with pictures of various Gdolei Yisrael. The first one they put out was the Rebbe, with a three-quarter view, where like you see most of the Rebbe's face, and there was a good deal of discussion whether such a thing is allowed. The file. Okay, that's all of that. Kind of a kitsu nimrats, So the coin they made, the medal they made, the Presidential Medal of Freedom, that also has the Rebbe's face only from one side. So again, even though it is 3D because it sticks out from the surface, there is more of a heter for it because it's only a side view, and therefore you only have one eye and one half of the nose and so forth, and therefore there's more of a heter for that than there would be. Like the medal they made for the Maaser Rekeach showed his face in front view. Or in three quarters view or whatever. So that Rabbi Yaakov Emden was less comfortable with. Lemaisa, even though, you know, as great as Rabbi Yaakov Emden was, many poskim disagree with him. And again, they have no problems drawing or sitting for pictures or whatever. Yeah. 3D means when it sticks out. Yeah. 2D means when it's flat on a piece of paper.
That's what 3D just means inside.
No. Okay. Shabbat, everyone.